Hello everyone, Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. Thank you for being here, welcome. Another day, another Go Show. Let's see. Our Go Show that we begin today is called A Father Takes Resolve. And let's get right into it, shall we? Nichiren begins. As I had not heard from you in a long time, I was feeling quite anxious. Nothing could be more wonderful than this matter between Tayu no Sakan and yourself. It is indeed marvelous. We read in the sutras that it is customary that when an age begins to decline, sages and worthies all seclude themselves from the world, and only slanderers, flatterers, smiling backstabbers, and those of crooked principles fill the land. To illustrate, when the water level drops, the pond is disturbed, and when the wind blows, the sea is never still. We also read that when the latter age begins, and when droughts, epidemics, and great rains and winds come in succession, sounds like the world today, doesn't it? Even the large-hearted become narrow, and even those who seek the way adopt erroneous views. Consequently, the sutras say that father and mother, husband and wife, and elder and younger brothers will be at odds with each other. Like hunter and deer, cat and mouse, or hawk and pheasant, to say nothing of relations with strangers. Monks possessed by the heavenly devil, negative influences such as Ryokan and the others, deceived your father, Simon no Tayu, and tried to destroy you and your brother. But you, having a wise heart, heeded Nichiren's admonitions. Excuse me. Therefore, just as two wheels support a cart or two legs carry a person, just as two wings enable a bird to fly, or just as the sun and moon aid all living beings, the efforts of you brothers have led your father to take resolute mind and conviction in the Lotus Sutra. It is wholly due to you, Hyoe no Sakan, that matters have worked out this way. And we, that candle's going through some revolution. We've read about these two brothers a while back in a Gosho address to the two brothers about their father, who was a true word adherent, a Nembutsu practitioner, and who threatened his sons with excommunication or taking their lands and vied them against each other. Anyway, he was an adamant obstacle for the brothers. And Nichiren advised them, just continue your practice, stay straightforward. Sooner or later, your father will come to understand, will come to his senses, so to speak, and he'll see that Nembutsu practice isn't what is claimed to be by Ryokan specifically, he talks about here. So evidently from the tone of the letter, we can see that the father has perhaps changed his mind. So let's read further. According to the teachings of the True Sutra, when the latter age has begun and Buddhism has fallen into complete disorder, a great sage will appear in the world. For example, the pine tree, which withstands the frost, is called the king of trees, and the chrysanthemum, which continues to bloom after other plants have withered, is known as a sacred plant. When the world is at peace, worthies are hard to distinguish. It is when the age is in turmoil that both sages and fools come into view. How pitiful that Heino Simon and the Lord of Sagami failed to heed me. If they had, they would surely not have been beheaded or have beheaded the envoys from the Mongol Empire who arrived a few years ago. No doubt they regret it now, because that spawned an invasion from Mongolia. The great ruler, Emperor Antoku, the 81st sovereign, commissioned several hundred teachers of the True Word School, including the Tendai chief priest Myoun, to offer prayers in an attempt to subdue the general of the right, Minamoto no Yoritomo. But their curses rebounded upon the originator, quote-unquote, as the sutra says. Myoun was beheaded by Yoshinaka, and Emperor Antoku drowned in the Western Sea. The 82nd, 83rd, and 84th sovereigns, that is, retired Emperor of Oki, the retired Emperor of Awa, and the retired Emperor of Sado, as well as the reigning emperor, these four rulers had the Tendai chief priest, and you remember it, by this time, Tendai wasn't what Dengyo had established. It was basically a True Word spin-off. It had really fallen into erroneous views by this time. So calling the Tendai chief priest, don't think of Tendai Chinese or Dengyo's Tendai in Japan. This is a latter, more corrupted Tendai that equated itself with True Word or even Pure Land. But anyway, had the Tendai chief monk and administrator of monks Jien and 40 or more other eminent monks, including those of Omuro and Miidera temples, offer prayers or meditations to subdue the Taira general Yoshitoki. But again, the curses rebounded upon the originator, quote unquote, and the above mentioned four rulers were banished to various islands. Concerning this great evil, everything's working. Concerning this great evil teaching of the True Word School, the three great teachers, Kobo, Jikaku, and Chisho, violated Shakyamuni Buddha's golden words that the Lotus Sutra is supreme, interpreting them to mean that the Lotus Sutra ranks second or third and the Mahavacharana Sutra ranks highest, going against the founder himself. Anyway, because the rulers put their trust in these distorted views, they destroyed both the nation and themselves in this life and are destined to fall into the hell of incessant suffering in the next. This next special meditation ritual will be the third. Those among my disciples who have already passed away are probably now observing this with their Buddha eye. And those whose lives have been prolonged, watch with your own eyes. The ruler and other high-ranking officials will be captured and carried off to a foreign land, and those who conducted the ritual meditation will either die insane or end up in a foreign land or hide themselves in the mountains and forests. The messenger of Shakyamuni Buddha, the Lord of Teachings, has twice been paraded through the streets, and his disciples and other supporters have been thrown into prison, killed, injured, or driven from the provinces where they lived. Therefore, the guilt of those offenses will be unfailingly extend to each one of the inhabitants of those provinces. Also, people will be afflicted with white leprosy, black leprosy, or all kinds of other terrible grave illnesses. My disciples understand the reasons for this. So he's talking about the current temperament of these True Word Nembutsu leaders visiting all kinds of pain and suffering on followers of Nichiren's teachings of the Lotus Sutra. With my deep respect, Nichiren. So, although this letter is specifically intended for you, the brothers, it should in general be shown to all my followers. Do not tell others about it. So, in other words, in your role as in your bodhisattva practice, although I write this letter to you, you can share it amongst other followers of the Lotus Sutra and my doctrine, Nichiren's doctrine of the Lotus Sutra, but don't tell people outside of our Sangha about it, because you'll just stir up a lot of angst and retributions, because you'll cause fear in these people, and the only way they know to respond to fear is with violence. So go ahead, spread it, propagate it amongst ourselves, amongst our Sangha, followers of Nichiren. So it's an interesting letter, and an interesting caution, because everything he describes, although it's in a time of Mongol invasions and unrest in Japan, we can see as he describes the nature of the unrest and the nature of how sages are kind of buried in the noise, and it's the most idiotic and unreasonable thinkers that seem to rise to prominence, right? The chaos is taking over. The lunatics are taking over the asylum, as it were. Well, this is very much the state of the world today, right? So this is why Nichiren is an interesting point of study for us. And you can see, as you study Buddhism, why we are in the same era, this latter day of the law, where we have all manners of cults and sects and groups and sanctioned and unsanctioned groups, all spreading teachings of Buddhism from the most ridiculous magical thinking to very hardcore sectarian. Look at what's going on in Burma. What's it called now? It's not called Burma. But the military uprising there, just worldwide, there's so many crazy things happening under the label of Buddhism that aren't Buddhism at all. So, you know, in that way, you know, we read here about Japan in the 13th century with Nichiren. And from what we read, we get the sense that there's 8 major other schools competing, vying for political power, certainly wreaking havoc on Nichiren's followers and his doctrine, but never succeeding. They just create a lot of noise, but he seems to rise above it all the time, surviving execution attempts and exiles and so on and so forth. But his followers sometimes aren't so lucky. And so it's amazing the strength of conviction that so many of his followers have in the face of the very threat to their lives, right? But can we surmise from this that there were even more schools of thought independent of these major 8 schools? Perhaps not. Things were, although very violent in those days, I think they were very strict. They had a lot of strictness about their behavior, right? But today there seems to be no holds barred. I mean, if you can have an email account, you can start your own cult, your own version of things, right? And that, on the one hand, is an open door for propagation, which by itself is a wonderful opportunity. But it also, because it's so unmonitored, unscholarly, so there's no checks and balances on what are you saying, where did that come from, that things can stray very easily, even with good intent. So, and this is a message to all of us as we practice Buddhism, to check ourselves constantly. Am I going by the scholarship of Buddhism here, or am I straying toward convenience? Have I talked myself into something that attracts me more while eschewing the stuff that I'm not as comfortable with. If something doesn't feel comfortable to you, you should redouble your efforts in studying it, because there's probably something of value there, and your karma is pushing you from it. Don't be a slave to your karma. Don't let your life be driven by your monkey mind. Instead, take hold of your mind and direct it how to be. Myoho Renge Kyo. Whatever that is, let it manifest itself so that I can see it, experience it, be in it. Myoho Renge Kyo, right? All right, well, that's another short one. A really wonderful encouragement to one of the brothers. And the next one, which is the three kinds of treasure. That should be an interesting one. They're all interesting to me, but I say that not because I'm just trying to be celebratory, but because it's going to present another bit of information that perhaps we haven't talked about, and we can see how that ties into the big picture. I encourage your practice. I encourage you to study. I encourage you to take anything I've said, or as you may read this book as well as me, of translation, that if anything sticks out to you that makes you frown or makes you wonder, don't satisfy yourself with not knowing. Use it as a point of study. Go for it. See all the idiotic points of views along with the most meaningful points of views, and you will shake through them, and you will find that the truth will bear out. It will stand out. It will make sense. It will fit within the scholarship of Buddhism. You'll find it. However you find it is your path. It's your way. Even if it takes you to really bizarre things, you'll see they're bizarre. And for whatever reason, that's something that you, karmically, will have to see as an outlier in order to, to focus your path to your Buddha, your Buddhahood, your Buddha-ness. We all have our specific little paths. They're not little, but they're little differences that make them very unique to you and you and you and me. So my whole purpose here is to help expose you to a lot of insights that I've had in a very conversational manner so that you may pick up your own insights from listening to me talk about them. And I'm centering everything I talk about on actual writings and translations of writings from the Buddhist canon. So I'm not just sitting here making up stories myself, although I often do that as analogies, you know, like the Dragon King's Daughter. A lot of sutras and stories abound in Buddhism because they're all analogous to states of mind. Buddhism is about the mind, about attitude and intent, how we form those attitudes, and how we direct our intent. This is why we chant Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, because we're directing our intent to our Buddha-ness. Right? So this tracks throughout Buddhism. And all the stories of Buddhism are mental exercises to realize the potentials that all of us have within our own samsaric reality, and how all of those has their own myriad paths to Buddhahood. That's all of scholarship of Buddhism. So no, did there exist a daughter of a dragon that we read about through several sutras, not just the Lotus? The important point in the Lotus Sutra is that she, being a emanation of Shakyamuni's mind, imagination, a point of discussion for possibilities in the world, is a female. That's the point. Not that she's the daughter of a dragon, but that, or a dragon king, right? King of dragons. But that she is a woman, a female. And only, I might remind you, in the Lotus, in this ultimate teachings of Shakyamuni, does he graphically display in words how a woman can attain instant, immediate enlightenment and Buddhahood just as easily, quote unquote, as any man. Stop and realize how incredibly revolutionary that is. 2,700 or so years ago, even today, are women equal to men? Do we think of them as equals? Do we equate man-woman as just a difference of genitals? No. Women is still, in many ways, and certainly in explicit ways throughout the country, or not the country, the world, in different countries, are actual possessions, like cattle. The fact that Shakyamuni Buddha says that they can attain immediate perfect enlightenment. You don't think he shocked a lot of people in his day? To a lot of people, that's shocking today, right now. That's the point of that story. That she's female, and yet can realize Buddhahood in an instant. Yeah, there's a whole story about how she gives a jewel to Shakyamuni Buddha. It's all storytelling, like Goldilocks. Right? She did the ultimate thing. She, as a woman, took something that she was attached to as a valuable thing, and easily gave it over to Buddhahood. Because whatever value she sensed from this jewel was nothing compared to enlightenment. Yeah, take it. I don't need that. What I need is enlightenment. Yeah, just like all of us. Thanks for watching. Thanks for being here. I hope to see you in the next one. Keep your practice strong. Study. Do your own independent study. Exchange ideas in the comments. Let me know what you guys are thinking. Email me directly, tlksylvain@gmail.com. Use the website, threefoldlotus.com. I've put a ton of information. It's all free on that website, including links to my Patreon page, to Kokoscope, to all sorts of white papers, to my bookstore, to get your own Gohan's on, all of that. It's all on threefoldlotus.com. Share this video with people that you think would be interested in practicing Buddhism correctly. Can't ask any more of you than that. Just watching these videos is very important for me, for my practice, and I trust for yours. So, with all of that gratitude, I'll let you go and I'll see you in the next one. Thanks a lot.